We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Hall.
I love that in the bleachers on Friday, everyone just started chanting Caleb Williams.
I mean, it reflects the fan base, right? It seems like eons ago that there was the debate, there was the argument, there was the Justin Fields camp, the Caleb Williams camp.
Yeah.
Would you be open to polls trading the first on draft day for a massive haul?
No. I think that we can agree. No more calls about would you trade out of the number one spot to accumulate draft picks. If they draft Caleb Williams and they move out, I'm going to paint my fingernails the next morning after the draft just for Dustin, just to alienate Dustin a little bit.
What will you write on him?
Take Caleb! Exclamation point. What color should I go with?
You know what? You got to go with like a hot pink.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
And I enjoy your show a whole lot. You guys are great.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good Tuesday morning, Chicago. We have a lot to talk about today. We have a big day ahead of us, debating, watching, waiting for the race to Springfield. Who gets there first? Jerry Reinsdorf or Kevin Warren? It seems like that's the case after a very eventful Monday afternoon. I thought this was draft week. I thought this was going to be the focus of the Bears' new beginning. Caleb Williams coming to town. I thought this was going to be a football-only week. And here we are. The Bears with the big announcement, upstaging everything that's going on. Big press conference Wednesday at Soldier Field, announcing plans for a lakefront domed stadium. And then hours later, Jerry Reinsdorf, seeing the news, issues a written response, not a response, it's a written statement, to Crane Chicago Business, his chosen method of communicating, apparently, about his planned investment. And hey, wait a second, nobody said that the White Sox would not make a sizable investment, a personal private investment. And Greg Hines from Crane's estimated it would be $200 million of a $1.9 billion project. Is that roughly what it is? I want to be accurate here, Molly. $1.25 billion.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
But he's going to pay the $200.
He's going to get $200 up front. That's like a down payment, a deposit, whatever the case may be. But we have a race to Springfield, and it is.
I like the way you put it. So Jerry's at home, and he like is having a warm milk ready to go to bed at 6 o'clock, and he finds out the Bears are holding a news conference, spits out his drink, and then rushes to pay some money.
Certainly leaves that impression, because many of the talking points involved in what the story included, number one, the biggest tell was that if it was a written statement. So basically, he saw what the Bears had planned, and the Bears plan, in fairness to Jerry Reinsdorf, I think the Bears' announcement that they were going to have a press conference on Wednesday caught a lot of people off guard.
It was very awkward.
Very strange.
And it didn't really come from the Bears,
did
right?
Not. Did not. I suppose it came from from the city?
I don't know.
From the great,
I'm not quite sure exactly the origin of it. I found out about it live while we were doing a podcast, the Take the North podcast, and we reacted to it. And it was one of those things that immediately my antenna went up a little bit because you think, okay, this is the equivalent of a Friday news dump.
I did laugh aloud, though, at the end of the story where it said that Jerry Reinsdorf earlier, told Cranes the team's current home at Guarantee Ray Field in Bridgeport has not worked out and needs to be to move to be successful. Reinsdorf, 88, says he has no plans to sell the team, but indicated that his son might well do so after he dies, unless the team has a long-term lease. I mean, just throw that one. Yeah,
that's just added to the story. But
yeah,
back to the Bears announcement. It was very unexpected because.
Came out of nowhere.
This is a week that is a celebration.
Sure.
This is the Caleb coronation. This is everything about the football team that you have been waiting to embrace. Oh, by the way, we're going to slip this in. What are they trying to slip in? That's your first reaction as a longtime cynical media member in this city. I think maybe that's the wrong reaction. That was my initial one. I still am skeptical a little bit. I'm wondering why they're doing it now. I was told maybe this is the message they want to send, that okay, you have to be conscious of the legislative calendar. Don't ignore that when trying to determine why they did this now, why they're doing this now. So, okay, I can be a little bit skeptical and cynical, and we can also appreciate the fact that they do have to get this out there so people can debate and try to figure out how to pay for it.
It was just a little bit awkward the way that it was kind of slow leaking. It's also weird that it's not today. It's tomorrow at noon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of advance notice, Mr. David.
Well, it's tomorrow at noon, and not that this is necessarily a big deal to people out there, but most of the Bears media contingent will be in Detroit tomorrow. Caleb Williams will be speaking tomorrow before the draft. The focus is on the draft, and the Bears, 24 hours before making their biggest draft pick in decades, will be talking about what they're going to do on the lakefront, giving us renderings to consider how great they are and grandiose, and then figuring out a way to get by the detail of how to pay for it all.
Total sucker for renderings. That's what I am, okay? I admit it. I got no problem saying it.
You're not alone.
I love that kind of stuff.
Everybody does. Everybody does. The star of tomorrow's press conference will not be Kevin Warren. Sorry, Kevin. But they will be.
It would be the illustrator.
The illustrator. Whoever came up with the renderings, whatever architectural firm or the 3D graphics guru, whatever the case is, we want to see what it's going to look like. We want to get excited about that. They want us to get excited about that. And then, oh, by the way, how much and who's paying?
Well, there you go. That's it. The only, you know, there's always another shoe to drop.
How much and who's paying?
Yeah.
That doesn't change no matter how much, how excited and how much hoopla is created by the arrival of Caleb Williams and maybe Roma Dunze, maybe Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe somebody else. But two draft picks on Thursday won't necessarily be enough to remove that question. I just think that they could have either done this before this week or next week. I know that's probably quibbling to some people, but I do wonder, and it puts your it turns your radar on a little bit when they're trying to rush this before the draft.
It's interesting. I you know, not for nothing, but according to what I was reading, the project, the Bears, of course, are putting in $2 billion in a publicly owned land. That's the headline.
Yeah.
But apparently they're not putting in the $2 billion. The Bear fans are putting in the $2 billion. The NFL is putting in the $2 billion. And the cost of the building itself is like $4.25 billion.
Yeah.
So less than half of that is coming from the Bears' coffers, do we put it that way?
I want to ask you that.
It's not the McCaskey coffers.
Well, I don't know. I understand why you'd say that. I know that's a talking point that the White Sox want out there, certainly.
Well,
but I do wonder if you are If you own a team, if you own a business, right, and you're charging somebody ticket price and they're willing to pay it, whether it's a personal seat license, yeah, or whatever the case is that not your money once they pay it? If they're buying a ticket from you, if they're buying a permanent seat license from you, are you not the owner? Aren't they paying you for that? I know that this is clearly from the White Sox camp that this is out there, sure, because they want everyone to recognize or scrutinize the way the Bears are actually, how much of that $2 billion is actually coming out of George's piggy bank,
yeah,
or George's personal account.
And this is from the Crane story. The Bears are believed seeking to tap into the hotel tax, but also have offered to put up $2 billion toward the estimated $4.2 billion cost of the stadium on parking lots just south of Soldier Field and related infrastructure. Sources close to the deal say the Bears would get the money not from the pockets of the team-owning McCaskey family, but mostly from fans in the form of seat purchase licenses from the sale of naming rights to the new facility, and from a stadium-constructed fund operated by the National Football League.
Okay, let's parse that sentence then.
Yep.
The stadium construction fund operated by the NFL is part of what the benefit of belonging to the NFL,
right,
affords you. It's the most lucrative professional sports organization going. Didn't you have the anticipation or expectation that the NFL was going to kick in a lot of money anyway?
Yes.
Okay. That's,
I honestly thought that might be on top of what the McCaskeys were putting up.
In addition to.
Right. When I first heard that
now,
they were putting
$2 billion. If this is included in that, then I think then, right, that's a conversation. The other things about being not from the pockets of the team-owning McCaskey family, but in the form of from fans in the form of seat purchase license, where does that money go if not to the McCaskeys when you're purchasing seat licenses? Whose money is that?
Well, if it's publicly owned stadium, that's a great question.
I just wonder. I have a lot of respect for Greg Hines and Cranes. You know that. But the way this is worded is intentionally to draw attention to or raise doubt about the McCaskey's investment personally in this.
No shadow of a doubt.
And I wonder, because of the origin of this, the story exists because Jerry Reinsdorf issued a written statement. And Jerry Reinsdorf clearly is trying to counter what the Bears announced. So if I'm reading this skeptically, I'm not apologizing for that, but I'm just telling you I'm reading it skeptically.
I have no problem with reading it skeptically. But because he is making his case, he's basically, he's undermining their case.
Of course.
And so I think, though, that if there is a way to undermine their case, I want to hear it. I want to hear what everyone has to say about everything, even someone else's skepticism about it when it's to their own benefit.
I do want to hear it.
To be skeptical.
I want to hear it too.
Saying?
Yeah, because I want to evaluate it too. But yeah. I don't know that trying to discredit.
I want to hear the McCaskeys come after Jerry. See what they think. Yeah, honestly,
right.
I want
There's
all
no
that
need.
Information.
There's no need.
Oh, they don't. It's
they're,
irrelevant.
They're punching down.
Yeah.
This is clearly a response, and this is why it's interesting, is because you're seeing what exactly are they claiming here. Did you know the NFL is going to kick in some money? Oh, did you know that the personal seat licenses are going to go toward this? And, oh, by the way, they're going to sell naming rights. Well, of course they are.
But in fairness, we were told they're putting $2 billion toward a publicly owned building. That's
yes.
That's what the information
$2 billion
we had going in. So now it turns out that, the league is going to give them $100 million of this or half a billion of that. I'm just saying, it's worth seeing what their investment really is.
Of course it is. I want to know the difference between the team's investment and the league's investment. But how the team's investment is broken down in a line item a report of what exactly they're spending and where they're getting those funds from, I don't know enough about.
I love that kind of stuff. I want all that. David, here's the problem. I don't want to hear that the Bears are giving $2 billion of their own money to build a publicly funded stadium. That made no sense to me. Now, it turns out, it's not actually their money. They're going to use some of the resources they have to bring the money in. That's going to pay for it. It's just different than me going down to my bank and getting a check and giving you money. That's all. It's worth noting that there's a difference.
Well, it's definitely worth noting. I do wonder about the origin, and I do wonder if they're entitled to use the money from the revenue created by PSLs,
yeah,
and the naming rights, however they want.
Again, if it's a publicly owned building, why do they get all that stuff and none of the public get it?
Well, they're paying the public. I think the publicly owned building part is
Their product.
As we're finding out, like Jerry Jones in Dallas or Arlington, that is the same sort of mechanism that this has happened throughout the National Football League, and I wonder if it's related to things that they can and can't do on the lakefront. I wonder if they're trying to maintain the publicly owned building so they have more of an access. I think, is it a loophole?
Oh,
it's an access to a loophole.
It's a complete loophole. Number one, it's a tax loophole, which is why they're not building in Arlington, right? So we know what went wrong in Arlington, which is they can't get cost certainty on the taxes over the long term. And so this is a way to avoid that whole issue. Otherwise, you wouldn't put $197 million down to own all that property, you know, knock down the track and then stop.
The fact that they've done that is I think one of the more overlooked aspects of this, is that they're seemingly committed to this lakefront project. I don't know how much how big the appetite is for this in Springfield. I don't know what the governor is going to say about all this. We know where the mayor stands, but where the mayor stands, let's face it, is on shaky ground in the city. So I don't know how much that matters.
Yeah.
I think you could get that off the ground, but I mean, you better do it quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just don't know about the political climate in Chicago, which is ever changing. And now you've got Kevin Warren, who seems to be spearheading this entire movement. And has taken the reins from George McCaskey. He's been here a year on the job. Have you seen that? Have you noticed that yet? Kevin Warren's been on the job for a year. There might be a story coming out today to mark that anniversary. Another one.
Well,
my point is that I think that there's a lot of momentum for this, and I appreciate what they're trying to do. This is going to be beautiful, but the devil is in the details. I don't really have a problem with them getting money, and if it's in their coffers, using it to this. But I want to know still, what is the public burden here?
Well, that's the only question.
That's the biggest question, but it's not one that I think we're any closer to addressing, because we're having a big fancy news conference at noon 24 hours before the draft.
Yeah, it's super weird, the timing of it. And it could just be happenstance. It could just be, you know, poorly thought out timing, or there could be more sinister reasons behind it. That's the problem.
The Bears are reshaping their entire public relations team and mechanism. They have fired people to make the messaging more streamlined and more conducive to what Kevin Warren wants. If they're going to do that, these details matter. And if they're going to do that, you better be polished and smooth, and your presentation better be flawless. And you better be able to answer some of these questions. If you're not, then you're doing it wrong, and you're doing it prematurely, and you're doing it too quickly.
I love the idea, though, of Jerry, you know, finding out about the news conference and scrambling to say, an arbitrary amount of money that he was planning on giving.
This statement to Cranes, the way that it was, the timing of it, and the way that it was worded, and the way that everything came about yesterday after the fact that we had this news break in the middle of the day, that the Bears were having this announcement, and this later in the evening came Jerry's written explanation, made you feel like he was sitting at home and he faxed it to Cranes. He faxed it. Probably in his leather jacket. I don't know what the purpose was, except for it screamed that he was basically saying, you imagine him saying, well, don't forget me. Don't forget me. We're still here. We still want to do this. I got $200 million of my own money I'm putting into it. It's going to cost 1.25, but what percentage is that?
That's a very
less than 20%.
Yeah, exactly. I think, David, there's so much going on, right? So the Bears have all this positivity and all this goodwill, and they're changing the, everything's going to change with the draft of the new quarterback, and everybody's starting to get a little bit excited, which they should be. And so then there's more stadium news, and we're going to learn more about the renderings and the drawings and all that stuff. Meanwhile, the White Sox, this is a team that is, what, three times more likely to be shut out than simply lose? I mean, they've been shut out.
Eighth shutout.
They get shut out again.
Yeah, eight
and they've won
now.
Three games.
There's not been another team in Major League history that has been shut out this frequently this early in the season than the White Sox.
But earlier in the day, after we got out of here, I go home and I find out that Danny Mendick's on the way. And I'm like, oh, great. They got Danny Mendick. Like, I, for a second, was kind of, oh, finally. I mean, he's like a legitimate ball player. What am I doing? Yeah. And then he got two hits. Don't get me wrong, but it didn't help him at all.
It's going to be hard to pay attention to the White Sox all year long. I mean, it's a struggle right now to even give them any kind of attention.
But meanwhile, he's at home texting and, oh, I got $200 million for you.
Well, those talking points, those reference points that came through in the Cranes story, those have been White Sox talking points for weeks.
Right.
And I think that's why it kind of was transparently a response to what the Bears did. I don't know if that's enough for people to say, oh, well, Jerry's going to put up $200 million. That's a lot of money. It's not to be diminished. It's a lot of money. But I think when you're ambitious enough to want a $1.29 million building or stadium or ballpark, it's a good start. But it's not as much money as you probably would expect an ownership or the owner or chairman of a team to put up.
It rings so hollow next to $2 billion, right?
Yeah, but so the $2 billion.
But that's what
it's
I'm.
It's not really $2 billion.
That's why I'm
Jerry.
Pointing that out. So you got to reduce the $2 billion.
$2 billion is $2 billion.
$2 billion
if it's not tax money is $2 billion.
It's halfway home.
Yeah,
you know, get to four, and we'll have a conversation.
There's gonna be, and this is why at some point this week we probably talk to Mark Gannis. Yes. It isn't all a negotiation, but at some point in time, you do wonder. There's going to be a public aspect to this, a governmental responsibility, if they're changing the infrastructure and everything on the lakefront, if they're reconfiguring Lakeshore Drive, if they're doing all these things.
They'll need their lawyers.
Well, they need the lawyers, but they're also going to
doesn't
the public bear
fighting.
Some
oh, you would hope.
Responsibility? There's going to be some public money involved in some way, shape, or form.
Well, there also may be some public outlash.
There will be. There will be lawsuits. Friends of the Parks will be
no shadow of a doubt
suing soon, probably Thursday at 4:05.
Yeah, they're going to need all their lawyers, and there'll be a big conference of lawyers, and there'll be all sorts.
From
of
a
stuff.
Very myopic point of view, from our little corner of the sports world here, one of the reasons that I think it triggered some of us yesterday with this news is that we finally get to a place in terms of talking about the Bears where we are cynicism free. It's finally a good story. It's a positive development. Caleb Williams is on the way. They're getting a franchise quarterback they've never had. We're talking about the Bears in terms we never have talked about them. And oh, by the way, this is a reminder. You just, why now? Why Wednesday?
Very Bears.
It is very Bears.
Yeah.
And it just reminds you to... I mean, why can't we just have nice things? Why can't we just say nice things? And that would be the focus of the week. Did you see who the Bears drafted? You see where they're headed? Can we talk about them being a playoff team finally? And oh, by the way, how are they paying for that new stadium? Can you believe they're not building in Arlington Heights?
It's a fascinating. There's a lot going on in the wide world of sports. We're going to get into all of it, including this. We're going to tear it all apart. We've got the pick six next. It's a fun day, and I get it. It's a weird day, but that's a typical day in the fine city of Chicago. Pick six is next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are you looking forward to seeing the Chicago Bears' new $2 billion lakefront stadium plans to be unveiled at noon tomorrow? Are you a sucker for renderings and drawings of a new stadium design? What will we learn? How much public funding, taxpayer contribution the team is after?
Yeah, when we learn that, that is the important information. I am really looking forward to the renderings and the drawings and all of that stuff. I am a sucker for just, and you know, give me something like that. Let my mind kind of roam a little bit and imagine what it'll look like and how it'll be. I love that kind of thing. I don't know that that any stadium can live up to the way that I envision it in my mind. And, you know, it's super cool. I just think it's a really exciting idea to think about a $4 billion stadium on the lakefront and what that will do for Chicago, what that will do for the city, what that will do for our skyline. Always very important that that everything kind of fits into the way a city looks. So I'm really excited to get a look at the drawings. You know, listen, the nitty-gritty stuff is where this ends up going. You want to see the kind of stuff we were just talking about. You know, let's get down to the dollars and cents, and let's figure out how much in the hole this is going to put everybody so some people can make a lot of money. That's what all of this is about. It's about the team itself being able to bank. And, you know, and I don't have a problem. I've always felt that teams are a public trust, provided you're producing results on the field and all of that. People don't mind paying to go to games, paying their if you've got the money and you want to get a personal seat license and you're willing to chalk up all that money, that's your business. If there are businesses that are willing to kind of front the expense of those kind of tickets for their clients, that's what, you know, they do. I'm not going to have to worry about that, but I do find it fascinating. I couldn't afford to do something like that, so I wouldn't even contemplate it. But it's great to have friends who have tickets.
Well, I'll raise my hand as well, a sucker for renderings. I mean, those, the pictures, the videos, the 3D social media renderings they put out, it's really cool. But haven't we already seen like a redo of Soldier Field rendering, right?
We saw
that already, and it was spectacular. So I'm assuming it's going to be similar to that. But the difference here is that, you know, using the line from a famous movie, you know, if they build it, they will come, right? I mean, no matter where the Bears play football, it's going to sell out every week, no matter what. And there's a big difference between these two projects that you guys talked about in the first segment of the show. There's a big difference between the 78 and the Bears. I mean, the Bears and that piece of property on the lakefront do so much more for the city of Chicago than the 78's been sitting there vacant for a reason, right, for a long time. So I don't know that a $2 billion project on the 78 does anything except for the White Sox, and then those fortunate enough to have the contract and work on building the actual project. But longevity, building something on the lakefront like this makes a lot of sense, I think, for the city and the state and everybody involved. Also, the Bears might be smarter than we think if you think about it a little bit. So they have the press conference on Wednesday. And then if it's not going the way being embraced by the public, guess what Thursday is? Thursday is the new team. Thursday is the new quarterback. Well, so you bury that news.
Yeah, I said it's equivalent of a Friday news dump, but we don't like Friday news dumps.
No.
I mean, it could be shrewd by them, perhaps, if it's not received well. You're right. But I don't think that makes you feel any better about the project.
Right, but no matter what, I guess my point is, no matter where the Bears play football, all this hand-wringing and arguing and stomping, wherever the Bears play, it's going to be sold out. We don't have to go. The NFL does a great job putting their product on television. No matter where they play football, and they better play, you know, I don't want them to move out of the state. Let's make that perfectly clear.
I don't think that's arguable, but I don't even know if that's the issue. Everybody knows that wherever they play, people will go. It's not about that. I think if you're talking about this project, Arlington Heights, it's who's paying for it. Who's paying for it? You're shaking your head. Do you not care who pays for it?
I to a certain extent, but at the end of the day, what's the option?
What's the option is
lose the team?
No, the option is that if you're presenting a lakefront project as they will tomorrow at noon, you have these grandiose plans, and it's going to be a great presentation with renderings, maybe even a video. Is Bill Curtis busy? Can he narrate? I think there's a lot of things that you're going to sell as ideal, but the price tag does matter because the price tag at Arlington Heights does not affect the public taxpayer in the city of Chicago the way that that project would,
right.
The way that that project should. You have the Bears, they're passing on an opportunity that they told us was worthwhile less than a year ago. They bought that land in Arlington Heights. They're pivoting away from that. They still own it. Why? They want to make as much money as possible. So
no,
I think,
they don't.
What do you mean, no?
This is a small-minded idea. If they were big thinkers, big business people, they would be straight to Arlington Heights. Okay, they'd be straight there and building that
stadium. I would disagree totally. They're small-minded because they're letting the tax issue in Arlington Heights get in the way of what was established as a primary goal is to build a stadium, own their own stadium, and make their own money. And they're letting these tax hurdles, these school districts, get in the way, and they think that's a sign of bigger problems ahead. And they're letting basically Kevin Warren take the lead here. And he's leading them right downtown. Great, ambitious, wonderful, grandiose. Show us how you're going to pay for it. That's what we want to see tomorrow, and that's what we're not going to see tomorrow.
That is the question.
Does the fact that there are only 58 underclassmen available for this week's draft speak to the proliferation of NIL money in college football? Is that why the NFL will see the lowest number of underclassmen in 13 years? Does that fact underscore a lack of depth in the NFL draft and therefore no need for the Bears to worry about getting back late-round picks?
I think one's interesting question. I don't think one is necessarily related to the other. There are fewer underclassmen in this year's draft. I wonder if more came out, if they would be the kind of player you'd want to draft on day two or three or not. This is not a very deep draft once you get beyond the first three rounds or so. Or so the experts say. I do think that you're seeing a couple things. You're seeing more college football players stay in college because they can make money. Maybe make more money than they ever would in the NFL in some cases, which is a good thing. They should. It's the empowerment of the student athlete, and student athlete is a term in quotes. So I think that's a good thing. The other thing is, if it is, you're seeing more and more players probably come to the NFL prepared. Because they're already professional athletes. We talked about Caleb Williams and the polish that he exudes. All these players, to a lesser degree, are more prepared for the professional aspect of getting drafted. What do you always worry about with NFL players? Time and money. They've never had that kind of time or this kind of money. Well, that's being disproven year after year. As we get more NIL players coming into the league, They know what to do with their money because they've made some, and they're better at managing their time. So, interesting point. I didn't realize it was 58 underclassmen, which has got to be as low as it has been in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears have gone out of their way to tell us how impressed they were with how Caleb Williams handled all that cash and bought gifts for his teammates, took his teammates out to dinner, paid it forward, if you will. Maybe a little bit of this is COVID still with the fifth year, getting that extra year of eligibility, guys hanging around, so guys not getting on the field sooner, right? And, of course, there's always been the argument in the NFL, right, that you had to be, what, 21 or you had to be a junior status in order to declare. It's fine. I don't want the Bears to have to recoup the late round picks. It's a top heavy draft. Get three or four best guys you can and move along.
Yeah, it is the fewest picks they'd have in history. I mean, it's not many picks, four picks, but they did already use a bunch of them to get things going. 58 underclassmen is shocking when you think about how so many of those players are the first players taken. So many underclassmen are usually, you know, really high going off the board. So it's an interesting year all the way around. I think that the proliferation of NAL, you know, I saw a quote from The Flower, who said that there are guys that are making more money in college than they'll make in the league. And that blows your mind.
Almost every starting quarterback.
When you think about it. Yeah, no question. It's true. So I get it. I understand that finally things have loosened up in the college game and people feel better about it and they're willing to, and maybe instead of coming to the NFL, maybe move somewhere else and try to improve your stock. And there are a lot of kind of tweener type players that can go to better situations, maybe better themselves for the next draft. Makes sense to me. In terms of the Bears, I agree with what you're saying, Dustin. I mean, you know, they probably, if they want to tap into some of next year's capital to get some more picks in this year's draft, and again, I'm talking if you're later in the draft and you want to give up a sixth rounder next year to get into the seventh round because you really like a certain punter or something, whatever it might be, some specialist, then feel free. But for the most part, I want them to kind of not worry about recouping whatever draft picks they've used, because they've used them for a reason and they've justified it. And now the idea that you can't take the number nine player who really should be like the number six player because you've got to drop down and pick about 15th so you can pick up more stuff. That would really annoy me. I kind of am hoping that is not the case, that they don't feel pressured to try to make up for some missing draft picks.
You can continue to talk about it, and you guys can continue to ask those questions, and I'll continue to answer it this way.
Was the White Sox promoting old friend Daddy Mendick the headline move among five roster moves on Monday for the White Sox, or was it bigger that Nick Nastrini and Lenin Sosa were demoted?
Oh, boy. You know, there's not a lot of there. Danny Mendick coming up, I told you, I was like excited. Oh, Danny Mendick, yeah. I had seen his numbers. He was doing well in AAA. Danny Mendick, you know, he was almost like a breakthrough guy before he hurt his knee. He can play. He is a legitimate Major League Baseball player, and they're bringing up a Major League Baseball player? Well, that's good. He also has a little power. I got excited at the idea of Danny Mendick joining the White Sox. That tells you where this team is at. I've heard of Danny Mendick. I've seen him play. I kind of like Danny Mendick. And sure enough, he got a couple hits. That was great. The bigger news, probably Nick Nastrini. It's a weird move, Nick Nastrini, because when you go down, I mean, I get it. They got Flexen. They're going to give him another start. But why not wait and see how Cannon does before you're – did Cannon move past him in his performance based on Nastrini's first game? The second game was no good. Neither was Cannon's. It's the problem now is Nastrini's down for 10 days. Is there something they're actually going to work on? Is there something they saw that they need to get done with him? Or are they just kind of, guy's got some, he's got some flexibility, so we just move him back down? I just, there's no rhyme or reason to a thing that's done with this team. At least they did, at least they played Corey Lee yesterday. That was the only, that was my only happy moment.
I think they're equal. So Mendick had hit five home runs, five games in a row. He'd hit a home run down in the minors. And Lenin Sosa, who should have been benched after that throw to home, but he wasn't, was sent down. And so it's kind of like a benching. So I think they're equal. I think it shows that if you're going to play without fundamentals, we're not putting up with it. And if you hit home runs and can produce a run down in the minor leagues, we're going to promote you for doing that. And that's what they should do. I don't understand the Nastrini move. And, you know, you and I talked about it, Mully, before the show started, and he's got options. I get all that. But, I mean, is he hurt? Is he ego bruised? I mean, once you're here, I think you learn more up here than you do down there, you would hope.
There's no reason for Nick Nastrini to go to Charlotte. There's no reason for Jonathan Cannon to follow him if they're tempted. There's no reason that Mike Clevenger is going to come here in a week and take away starts from guys who actually matter in your organization and guys who you may be able to count on once you return to respectability, assuming you have a plan to return to respectability. Why they sent him down after one bad start is another of the questions that are continue to mount when it's the White Sox. I don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing.
Mm.
Danny Mendick coming here, great. I mean, we can talk about his great bat at Charlotte. Danny Mendick? Okay.
I know.
I'll play along. Yeah, great job, Danny. Five straight home runs. It's AAA. Your major league team would probably be, you know, second in the division.
I was genuinely excited. I mean, that's so stupid.
It's ridiculous, but it is the White Sox, and they are majoring in ridiculous this year. Eighth shutout last night. Eight of them already. That is history-making. We're paying attention to them because they are just historically bad, and they are becoming farcical by the day.
I did not think you were going to close me out with that one. That's a great question.
We talked yesterday about whether the Cubs should make a move for White Sox closer Michael Kopech. Come get him, please. But what about making a move for Oakland's Mason Miller, who on Monday struck out Volpe, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge with fastballs hitting 103, 103, and 102 to secure an A's 2-0 win?
Yeah, I think he's a guy to keep on the radar. There's a lot of guys who you want to be on that radar. I think with closers, especially, this is an interesting development and a name to watch. With closers, you kind of want to have the hot guy. And so it's April 23rd. My sense is that Jed Hoyer won't get serious about acquiring a closer for at least 2 months. They're going to let this play out. Albert Alzolay wants the ball back. He says he can do that job, and he's going to try to do it again. I think they'll give a couple guys, maybe some opportunities there. Maybe they find one accidentally. Maybe they find one on purpose. I don't know if they'll find one at all. But if they trade for somebody, add Mason Miller to the list. It's a long list. There's got to be a long list. You've got to exhaust every avenue, every resource you have. Because if you're serious about contending, you're going to need a closer. You have a closer problem.
They have a closer problem. Part of the closer problem is Jed, Carter, and the highest paid manager of baseball not looking like they know how to manage or put together a bullpen or have a pregame meeting. Again, please, somebody, please explain why, after the guy blew a save, you would give him the ball for a four-out save. He's not built for four-out saves. He's barely built for three-out saves, let alone a four-out save. And great, he wants the ball again. He says all the right things. I appreciate that. You want a guy who says, give me the damn ball. I want to try it again. I'm built for this. Who's going to make a trade first? The A's, the White Sox, or the Marlins? And do the White Sox have anything that anybody wants?
Michael Kopech. Didn't we propose a trade yesterday? Look, it's not yet time to be trading for people, and I think you do have to kind of go through all your options. But there's going to come a time, and you're going to have to make a deal. I really think that the answer to their closer problem is outside the team. I would like to see Neris do better and then give him a chance at that, but I don't know that that's the case. So I think that eventually, just kind of wrap your mind around the idea that if they want to get to where they're going, they've got to resolve that issue, and maybe the only way to do it is outside their team.
That's a fair question to ask.
That's the voice of Mark Florio. Plenty of questions to ask him at 8:44 when he joins Mully and Haw. Catch it on Twitch. Does the trade of the Jets quarterback Zach Wilson to the Broncos for a swap of late-round picks mean anything for the Thursday night's draft? In other words, do the Broncos still need a quarterback? Can you believe that four of the five quarterbacks from 2021 have been traded with the highest pick, a fourth-rounder from Dallas, for the services of Trey Lance?
Would never have guessed that Trey Lance got the most return, because his career arguably has been the worst of all those guys. Never really got off the ground, you know, never really did anything in San Francisco. And, you know, thank God for Mr. Irrelevant. I think that Justin Fields, if he ends up playing more, could end up being a fourth round pick, right? So, but it was technically a sixth-round pick, so it's hard to feel. They're all sixth-round picks, all those guys. You know, certainly they gave up a sixth for and it was a weird one. They traded they gave a seventh, so they traded down like 40 spots or something to get rid of this guy. That's all they got. They got next to nothing. And, you know, we know that there's nothing coming for Mac Jones, and the same thing with Justin Fields. So it was a super weird draft in retrospect, and Trevor Lawrence stands alone. He's still a starting quarterback in the league. It's amazing how – I just wonder if that puts any water on the idea that the Bears are about to get the quarterback. You know, we talked yesterday – about him wanting to play 20 years. Let's hope so. Let's hope he lasts that long. Let's hope he's a 10-year guy. These quarterbacks, they get on the field and they're in bad situations and they don't have people taking care of them. It's a tough position.
Let's hope he's a second contract guy. Let's, you know, chasing Tom Brady in 20 years, and let's get to a second contract. Let baby steps. Okay. Let's have small attainable goals and then bigger goals after that. You know, a lot of this could be development versus talent. It very well could be. There could be that issue. Might be something to talk to Coach Wannstedt about when he's with you guys, 7:40 to 8:20. You know, Trey Lance, he might have a bigger role. Like, there's some real business issues going on with the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. Like, Dak Prescott might not be the quarterback of the Cowboys, and they might need Trey Lance. So, you know, the Cowboys, believe it or not, could be in play in this year's draft for a quarterback if they don't have any belief in Trey Lance. And I don't think the Broncos are done. I don't think this is the answer, but it gives them an opportunity to not have to go all in on the quarterback. And hey, if Sean Payton is so good at being a quarterback whisperer, then, okay, coach the guy up. And I'm sure a change of scenery can't hurt Zach Wilson at all.
Yeah, I don't know, though, if it's same was said about Mitch Trubisky and that didn't work out, and they were a similar type of draft guys in terms of where they went. The 2021 draft in terms of quarterbacks is evidence of all that is wrong with the NFL and the quarterback position and how people rush these guys onto the field before they're really ready for that. You know, Zach Wilson was a creation.
Yep.
Trey Lance was a project, a projection. Justin Fields was a square peg in a round hole, not maybe through any fault of his own, but he had a lot of help in looking out of place in the pocket in Chicago. And then Mac Jones was somebody whose intangibles were exaggerated because he was in a system and you wanted him to be the next big thing in Boston after Tom Brady left town. You can look at all of these examples and all of the pressures that existed to get these guys on the field sooner rather than later. And that's the problem. So it's a reminder. It's a cautionary tale. I don't think it applies in Chicago, but I think it applies to every quarterback taken after Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is the exception to the rule, not just because he's about to be the Bears quarterback, but because that is the case in this year's quarterback class. What happened in 2021 should be a cautionary tale to the team that drafts Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, and J.J. McCarthy. Don't rush them to the field, because you know what will happen if you do? 2021 all over again.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Have we talked enough about the MLB changing draft rules? That means teams no longer are rewarded with top draft picks for ranking. In other words, a team like the Sox, that is not part of the MLB revenue sharing, will pick fifth this year, but can pick no higher than 10th in 2025. Can you believe there'll be no reward for what's shaping up as the worst season in franchise history?
Oh, it will be the worst season in franchise history by the time we get to October 1st. And I don't know if by May 1st we'll still be paying attention. But, yeah, this is a bad development in terms of, if you were ever going to be this bad, you would want something for it. At least the Blackhawks got Connor Bedard. At least the Bulls got Derrick Rose. If you become part of a lottery even, that would be better than what this guarantees, which is nothing. Now, there's big differences in the way that the MLB draft produces maybe instant change or instant results in the other drafts, but still not a good development and no reward for all of the pain and agony that's ahead of us as we continue to, for some reason, to watch this team on the south side.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm not going to make it up like I understand it. Somebody's going to have to explain it to me. I don't know, like, how are they already slotted to pick fifth this year because of last year's results? Okay, so we've got that. And no higher than 10th in 2025.
Because they pick in the top 10, they can't pick in the top 10 again next year.
Well, the NHL has done the same thing, right? The NHL, you can only have the first pick 2 years in a row, and after that, isn't that right, David? They've got a sliding scale also, where you can't tank.
Anti-tanking.
Anti-tanking. Yeah. The NHL is doing the same thing. The difference is, in baseball, it usually takes more time. I mean, the top 10 picks in Major League Baseball's draft, they're not like playing Major League Baseball the next year. Maybe you get a pitcher who comes in as a reliever or something, gets called up quick.
So,
see Garrett Crochet.
If you're paying the luxury tax, then if the Sox are paying the luxury tax and they have this season, then they will be rewarded with, they could get it, but the number one pick, because they're trying to win. They're trying to keep teams from purposely losing. I guess.
Then I'm all for that rule.
I don't have a problem with that idea.
The spirit is good. The results are bad.
Yeah, but from a Sox perspective, they gain nothing by this. You see what I'm saying? Like, even if they are losing on purpose, and I'm not sure they are, they're just trying to save money, and they've gutted the whole organization, and they hired the wrong guy, whatever way you want to put it. Whatever they're doing, there's no reward for it. So this of all the years to have the worst season in your history, you get nothing in return. You don't get a bump with a good player coming in. I mean, if you can pick well, the 10th pick in a draft can be a great player. But can they pick well? We haven't seen it yet. So I think it just tells you, it tells you one thing, that this is not on purpose. They're just this inept.
Which is not exactly comforting. No,
it's a very dark reality that we're learning here. Okay, we've got the extra point next. It's about the draft, so stay tuned. 312-644-6767 is the number. We're going to do the extra point next. Mully and Haw score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
The four picks the Bears hold in this weekend's NFL draft are the fewest they've had in their history. With so many of them already used for this year's team, are you okay with a small draft class, or is it incumbent on them to get more picks?
I think that's going to be the focus of a lot of conversations. I don't necessarily agree it needs to be. I think this is, of all the years that the Bears have been drafting in the last, say, 20, 25 years, the focus is always on getting more picks, trading back, doing that. And I know Dave once said, looking forward to having conversation with Coach, who believes that that is one of the best options for the Bears at number nine. But I think this is more about quality than quantity. This is the year where if you have a chance, dare I say it, and I'll say it again when Dave is here, to move up, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is on the board at number five, you've got to have that conversation. You've got to be willing to go up and get somebody who might be the top player on your draft board, maybe the best player in the draft. I think the focus has got to be on quality over quantity. You're looking for elite players, blue players, however you want to designate them. You're looking for difference makers. And I don't think that because you have more picks in a late in a draft that isn't necessarily going to be known for its depth, that that gives you an advantage. I think your advantage is you are right now in the catbird seat, as they say. You got 1-9. You got a chance to, you got a chance to make history. You've got a chance to turn your franchise around. I'm not going to get caught up on the fact that they might not get a swing tackle later in the draft or a backup safety that might be groomed or somebody else that is a piece that might be more depth than difference maker. You've got Montez Sweat. You've got Keenan Allen. You've got Ryan Bates. Those are the products, kind of de facto draft picks from the 2024 draft. And you're going to add whatever you do with your ninth pick, maybe it's going to be Roma Dunze. Conventional wisdom says that will be the guy. And you're going to get Caleb Williams. I don't get caught up on what they don't have. 1, 9, 75, and 122, that's enough.
And feel free to go ahead and trade 75 and 122 and move up from 9 and go get Marvin Harrison Jr., as we've talked about. Listen, the fewer picks means the fewer things they can follow up, right? We've talked about that. Like, don't mess it up. That's been a theme that you guys have brought up, and I agree with it. Like, trading back just creates opportunity for you as an organization to foul things up. Keep it simple. Look straight ahead. Look straight ahead. And I do think it is important to remind everybody when you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe four picks. These picks helped you get blues, right? So there's no guarantee these scratch-off tickets – If we want to go that route, are going to be blues. And these guys were blues when they got here. So they've done a good job with these picks. And like I said, I'd be fine if the Bears, if the class that we're talking about on Monday morning is Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think anybody's going to care that they were the only two picks. And then we might be talking about an all-time class, right? We might be talking about a Butkus Sayers type of draft class. So let's see.
Well, I that's very interesting. I'm not against moving up for Marvin Harrison if that can be, if you can pull that off. I'm not against it. But I am against moving down. This question at its heart is really, do you trade the number nine pick? That's what this question is. Because the only way that you're going to recoup some of those draft picks is by trading down from number nine. That's it. That's the only way it's going to happen. So you're sitting there right now, and you got two top 10 selections in a draft that has about, hopefully, 15, 16 blue-chip players. And you've got two of them. And if you get the right guys, and I think the quarterback's the right guy, and then you don't even have to move up. If you just stay where you're at, if you hold your water, if you take what is presented to you. This draft is such that there's a desperation among teams for quarterbacks. There are teams that are going to take players that shouldn't go before the players that are on the board. And so someone will fall to you at number nine that normally would have been long off the board by then. That is going to be an underdrafted player. That should have already been gone, and it could be Roma Dunze. And if you came out of the draft with Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, that's a home run. Mm-hmm. That's a home run draft, and I wouldn't feel bad about it at all. I would run like a thief in the night. I'd feel thrilled that you got that kind of a haul. If you want to move up and try to be even more, dare to be bold. That's the time to do it. If we've learned anything from watching this team, it's that a guy like Montez Sweat can impact the team. He can enhance what you have and make people around him better. DJ Moore can make your team better. You can have a guy who comes into your offense and adds something that you didn't have and makes you a significantly better team. You got a chance to get two of those guys out of the first 10 picks in this draft, and you better come away with it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, let's say they trade down and they end up with a good edge guy and they get another pick. And, you know, I'm not going to be heartbroken about it. But I feel like as we're sitting here right now with Thursday quickly approaching, I'm boiling water. I'm tearing up sheets. I'm trying to get to a point where we can pull this thing out of the birth canal and we can have two seriously good players. I just don't want to see him going down to 30 and picking up three more picks.
That'd be way too low.
No.
I think if you go any lower than 15, it's going to be a little bit of a disappointment. And even if you trade down, I get what you're saying. I would also be somewhat, I don't want to say disappointed, but you're never disappointed with, say, if you take a test and you've been studying for a long time and you get a B+ or even an A-. You know, you're right to the 89 to 91 range. You're okay, I'll take it. But – you know that, you know, you were ready to ace that test.
Yeah.
And you're in a position to see the answers. And you can get that A.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah, ace this thing.
Ace it.
And you know what? All you got to do is take the number one overall pick, number nine overall pick. You could, you know, you can get bold and you can move up and you can make it, you know, your, you can make the draft your own. And that would be a marvelous thing to see. But just don't mess it up, man. Don't just take what is offered to you.
A lot of rumors flying about what teams in front of the Bears are going to do. The Falcons were reportedly interested in bringing in Michael Penix Jr. at number eight. Can you imagine if there are five quarterbacks taken before the Bears are on the clock?
All that means is that the ninth pick's going to be even better than you thought.
Absolutely. You have an even better choice and variety, and that's why you don't want to move down. The debate or the conversation with Dave will be good because I know that is his
inclination. Yeah, I know he feels that way, yep.
But I think that's almost the instinct of a lot of personnel guys.
A lot of people feel two for one. But you know what? Just take, you know, again, learn from the lessons that we have had in the last year. You want to win in the NFL, top shelf players. You got two coming. Don't blow that.
Don't blow it.
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And one of the things I always look at coming home to the city is I always look for cranes in the air.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's the voice of Kevin Warren. He has been on the job for a year, David. I'm not sure if we've discussed it yet.
A lot of publicity surrounding his anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
First year on the job. I think that both papers, sometimes in the Tribune, did deep dives. Colleen Kane did a nice job at the Tribune. And then yesterday, Courtney Cronin on ESPN.com did another look at Kevin Warren. And it talked about how his mentorship of Ryan Poles has been a factor. There are two things I think that are worth pointing out. And we'll get to the phone calls because sure. I think a lot of people want to weigh in because of what's happening tomorrow. The Bears have called a news conference to unveil those
drawings.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be at noon at Soldier Field in the United Club, and we'll wait and see what happens. It is odd timing because 24 hours after that, they're going to make the biggest draft pick of the millennium, probably. Anyway, the big thing to remember, I think, is that, or to look at, it stood out to me. In that story, there was an anecdote about Kevin Warren offering the information that he had several dinners with Ryan Poles in the days and weeks leading up to trading Justin Fields, kind of shepherding him through the process, which is all part of his role as he defines it. I think it's very interesting that you have the team president counseling the general manager on the biggest trade he's made this offseason. That's interesting because anybody wondering about his role in football matters might find that very fascinating. The other thing I think is worth pointing out, Mully, and this relates to the stadium project. Of all the hires that Kevin Warren has made in the last month or so, several months, as he's reshaped his front office, one of the ones behind the scenes is very interesting because I think that, and she was profiled in the Sunday Tribune, Andrea Zopp, She's an ex-Chicago deputy mayor.
Yep.
She's got a lot of experience and know-how in how to navigate through some of the political minefields that...
She's from Beverly, I believe, right?
And she's also got that institutional knowledge that Kevin Warren lacks when it comes to the city. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, suggests... It reinforces this idea that if you thought Kevin Warren was serious about this lakefront project, when he's hiring somebody as, you know, in an advisory capacity, she's a lawyer that's very accomplished, very intelligent, and very savvy. They're serious about this. And I don't think anybody should doubt that.
I don't doubt that.
But, but you heard yesterday the leverage play. This is the leverage play.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Who said that? That has already, the whole leverage, that we've moved beyond that.
I'm glad that you agree with that. I think it's worth reinforcing to people, though, if they're still all skeptical. The Bears are very serious about making this work. I don't know how they're going to pay for it.
Explain the leverage play. What's the what are you looking for? They've already given you a tax break. They're going to give you a 50-year tax lockdown and build a building here?
I'm not suggesting it, but
I think they're going too far.
I think that there are some people that still believe. I think Dan Bernstein in the Midday Show will talk about how he still expects it to be Arlington Heights. I think that there are some people that still look at the Arlington Heights possibility and wonder about that. I think we're beyond that at this point, and the focus is all on the lakefront, as we will see tomorrow at noon. I wonder about the timing of it because of, number one, it diminishes and takes away some of the focus from the draft, but also it does feel like the equivalent of a Friday news dump, but I wonder what news are they trying to dump? How will they pay for it? Are they trying to lessen the scrutiny? I don't know.
312-644-6767. Let's squeeze in Chuck. Chuck's waited patiently in Glencoe. Hey, Chuck.
Hi, fellas. Quick question. I got a statement about the stadium issue. First of all,
yep.
I'm wondering if you guys remember how many years it took Warren to get the current stadium in Minnesota finished. It was 8 years, and there was all kinds of close to midnight talk with the Minnesota legislature that didn't want to participate. All of this is chronicled in Cranes and also in, one of the football internets as well. Another question, a rhetorical question about a stadium. Are the Bears when they're playing all their games indoors? And as part of the romance about being on the lakefront, being outdoors on the lakefront, I don't expect an answer on that. The other thing I'm wondering about, and maybe you guys know this because you've already done the research, with 70% of first-round draft quarterbacks not working out in the NFL, to have successful careers, how many first-year quarterbacks are in the playoffs their first year? And maybe the Bears fans shouldn't get beyond their skis just because his name is Caleb Williams. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, Houston made the playoffs last year. They were a worse team than the Bears.
Might be a bad time to make that example.
Yeah.
Make that point.
Caleb Williams is coming into a pretty good situation.
Very good.
Not often do quarterbacks – you know, again, the draft rewards incompetence. So the worst you are, you get the highest pick you can get. So the Carolina Panthers were kind of doubly bit because not only are they awful, but they traded with the Bears and they got the first pick in the draft and they took the wrong quarterback, as it turned out. And they ended up, the Bears ended up getting the number one pick after trading the number one pick, which doesn't happen very often. And they've got the gift that is Caleb Williams. This is a player that teams have been waiting to draft for a while.
For a while.
If he had come out after he won the Heisman Trophy, he'd have been the first pick in the draft a year ago. He really would have.
No doubt about
that. So I think it's interesting that now your reward is you get him. I'm not concerned about his ability as a player.
Have you seen him throw?
Yeah.
People say that. Have you seen him throw? The fundamentals that he just continues to practice when he's throwing the football. We'll get to what the indoor football aspect of this whole project means and what it doesn't mean when we come back.
312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.